Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's going on, Earners? Welcome to EYL University, the number one place for business education. Shadi, tell them what we're bringing.
Yes, EYL University already has over 100 past webinars from all areas of business. It includes weekly webinars from industry leaders. It includes access to our investment Facebook group, movie club, our book club. It also includes access to monthly financial planning calls with yours truly. But what has been added has access to MG the Mortgage Guy's Home Buyer's Blueprint, over 14 hours, everything you need to know as far as the home buying process is concerned. And also what has been added is access to our monthly group chat call. Right. So once a month, me, Troy, and the whole team is going to let you in on our personal plays, our portfolio, what we're doing, and more. So all of that, we are running for a special promo code of 70% off for a limited time only. So head to EYLUniversity.com right now and take advantage.
You know how this works. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. We'll see you on the other side.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
F*** a mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
People come on social media for their business and they get like 2 followers and they're like running 50% off ads and sales. And it's like, you don't even have an audience. And it's like, you know, the whole point of, we're in business. So the whole point is to make money. We're never going to apologize about making money. If you are apologetic about making money, this isn't the channel for you, but right, there's ways to go about making money. And sometimes, like, if you promote too much or you're too gimmicky or you it's like you can make money, but over the course of time, you're diluting your brand. Yeah. Because it's not. And even if we look at the best brands in the world, like Nike, like they have sales, but how many times do you actually see a Nike commercial selling something? It's not really too often. Most Nike commercials are like, you know, Andre Agassi, that legendary situation, or Michael Jordan with dunking the basketball, yeah. Serena Williams with her daughter, like even Colin Kaepernick. It's an ad to build their brand, not really selling anything, because you're going to buy it on the back end. Mm-hmm. Just by the strength of their brand just becoming so dominant that they don't necessarily have to beat you in the head with 50% off sales. you feel compelled to buy it because they've built so much brand equity over the years.
I think what you said is very important. John, I'm glad you broke that down with the awareness, interest, and trust. It's like, if you have two followers, we don't even have an awareness of you and you're trying to sell something, which automatically makes me distrust, right? And so how do I go into a relationship with distrust? I don't. And so now I turn away. So now even if you put valuable content out to the world, you've already lost us because you started selling to us. And so it's very key to give value, give value, give value. Let people see what's happening. Let them build their trust. Let them build the awareness of the brand, which will in then turn grow the interest in what you're doing, which will make it a lot easier when it's time for you to say, you know what? All right, I've been doing this. Here's what I also have to offer. You know what I mean?
And that's something I'm gonna let you finish, John. But somebody said, but how? But everybody's way is different as far as how to build brand. But how we built our brand in 2 minutes is that we just created maximum value as possible. So before we had a podcast, we had an Instagram page. Well, even before that, I had my own personal Instagram page. I wasn't selling anything. I was just adding value. People that I would take time to write captions, write posts, make videos. When we started Earn Your Leisure, we didn't really even know, to be completely honest, we didn't know how to monetize a podcast, but we figured that once we had enough attention, there would be opportunities to monetize. So our goal was just to add as much value as possible. And that helped build our brand on social media. And then, you know, all throughout, we just had a unique way to relay information with business and mix it with pop culture. And that was our brand building proposition, was that we're going to educate people for free. We're going to give as much value as possible. We didn't sell anything. We didn't have merch. We didn't have a live event. We didn't have anything.
Nothing.
So now when we have paid products and we've already built brand equity, but it took us 12, 13 months before we even, probably even longer than that, like before we even sold one thing that made us any money.
Yo, and so it reminds me of that graph, that last graph, right? You guys didn't start with sales. You could have, if you could have tricked a few people into buying a quick e-course right at the jump without really knowing anything. But instead, you were that red line. You were building that brand equity by just giving. And as a result, look at the platform that you guys grew. And, you know, speaking of Nike, I caught a glimpse of their brand essence framework, and their one word was performance. I don't think that you're any faster in Nikes than you are in Adidas, but their core brand was performance. And think about just think about the look of their logo. The swoosh kind of just makes you feel like performance.
The flash.
And it's a really astute observation, Rashad, that they don't sell. I never thought about that. They don't sell shit in their commercials.
No, they don't.
They don't sell their brands. So if you have a tea company, if you have an e-com company, you know, what's that word going to be for you? A, and then B, how can you associate your brand with that feeling? For example, at Loop, our purpose is to move people. We don't care about insurance in the same way that Nike only cares about sneakers because it drives performance. So we stand for movement, right? Because insurance gets you on the road and then you go and you got to do all the things that you got to do. So how are we going to build brand around that? Well, we're going to have photography of people on the road, on their hustle, doing their shit, and just a little photo, just a little icon at the bottom that says Loop, right? And so, for example, those are just some of the low-hanging fruit ways, man, that we could build brand. You got to lock in on that specific value that you feel you want to put brand equity into.
And I also think that for building a brand, going back to our personal experience, you know, we learned a lot from rap, and we took a lot from hip-hop artists to help build our brand. So, you know, being a big Wu-Tang fan growing up in the late 90s, and, you know, when you saw that W, that meant something. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to hear Wu-Tang to see that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you saw the W, you automatically associated Wu-Tang. And then when you had the Killer Bees, like, they had a mascot. If you think about it, so it's like, even schools, you could learn a lot from schools. school is not a problem. It's what they're teaching that's the problem. But the infrastructure of school is actually pretty brilliant. Schools, they have clubs inside of schools. They have sports teams to keep you engaged. They have times when you check in. They have periods. They have lunchtime. They have mascots. Mascots is extremely important. So it's like when you saw the killer bee, that meant something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it all equated back to Wu-Tang. But they didn't have to put Wu-Tang on every single thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you see us, our mascots are our emojis. That's like a mascot, right? Yeah. Like that's like a team mascot. Yeah. That's branding. We don't have to put Earn Your Leisure on everything. So now you see EYL. EYL, three letters is very nostalgic when you think of luxury brands. YSL, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff when you think of like three letters, like it's real easy to remember and it's an abbreviation. Mm-hmm. People love abbreviations. Even if they hate the abbreviation, IRS, you name it. Like, you know what I'm saying?
DEA. So,
yeah.
Use anything other than the IRS. Man. Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah. The alphabet boys.
Yo, we got Ani in here. Let's let Ani in. I would love
Yeah, let's bring him in. So that's something to keep in mind as well, as far as you don't necessarily, and even assets over liabilities.
I was
assets,
gonna go there.
Assets over liabilities, yeah. That's ours. We made that up. Anybody that's knocking that off, you should Please be ashamed don't. Of yourself. But once again, we don't have to put Earn Your Leisure on everything, because whether you see the emojis, whether you see EYL, whether you see assets over liabilities, it all equates back to the mothership.
That's exactly where I was going. And if you look at the most popular thing we sell, it is assets over liabilities, but it goes back to the point of what we're doing, right? Value, put value in your life, take the things out that don't add value, right? So assets over liabilities. And so when you see that, it doesn't matter where you see it, most people are going to think us. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to say Earn Your Leisure. When they see assets over liability, even some of those bootleggers out there, they automatically think that must be Earn Your Leisure. And shout out to our lawyer who's on that. Cease and desist, please.
Yo, you guys, someone's under your guys' skin, man, because you guys think, right?
You know, John, we just got to put it out there. We got to put it out there.
You got to be original, man.
It's synonymous with us. And so, like, again, you don't have to see Earn Your Leisure on the shirt. You see assets over liabilities, we're thinking, all right, those people must be an earner. I had a friend of mine today who was climbing in the Catskill Mountains over the spring break. And she made it to the top and was wearing the assets over liability shirt. You know what happened when she got up there? Somebody ran up to her and said, oh, you're an earner too?
Oh, talk about brand, man.
Freaked her out, right? Because she was like, huh? No, I worked with Troy. We were, he was my coworker. She's like, oh, but you're not an earner. She's like, yeah, I'm an earner, but like, that's my friend. Like, I can call him. And it was like, call him. I'm like, nah, let's not do that. But it's synonymous. You can, one thing leads to the next. And so we don't have to put Earn Your Leisure on everything. People know us for assets over liabilities. Mm. We got alumni in here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got alumni.
Yo, what's up, Ani? How you doing, man? How you living?
Doing well, man. I'm excited. Shoddy and Troy, what's up, y'all?
My God, what's going on?
What's going on, man?
Last time we talked, y'all were regular human beings, and now status, you know, Range Rovers and bus downs. I see what it is.
it was your fault, partially your fault.
John, I see your two-tone back on your wrist. Congrats.
Thank you. You know, hey, I mean, lose it for a minute.
We did get the watch and we get the car. We haven't gotten the driver yet. So we're getting there. We're getting to your level soon.
More inspiration.
Yes.
Yo, Ani, I'm glad you jumped on, man. You were the first person I thought of when I thought of brand. I think that you've done an exceptional job. For those that don't know Ani, man, just total legend, been in the game a long time. One of the practitioners that I admire most in the space. A lot of people talk it, man, but Ani's been doing this shit and doing it across industries, managing artists, have rep Wiz Khalifa at some time, is now managing the career of the young star, Ani Khan. But in addition, dabbles in a little e-commerce. We had Launch Equity Apparel together, owner and CEO of Kolkata Chai Co., dope concept that the audience wants to hear more about, but also dabbles in real estate. So you're a lot like me in the sense that we are multi-hyphenate practitioners. And the one through line that you have across all your projects is that they all have impeccable brand. I mean, we're not big landlords by any stretch, but you would think we were, because you know, the way that we brand our shit. And for example, in Philly, where I know you have some real estate, you have just regular plots of land, which anyone would have just called a plot of land. But Ani done branded it, then called it, you know, Tiger Park, created a website around it, you know, really made an experience, hosted some pop-up art, you know, all that kind of stuff. And even with your Chai concept, which I believe is your anchor at the moment, you really lead with a super, super brand forward approach, man. So welcome to the show. Welcome to the limited series, guest number one, episode number one.
What an honor. Thank you, y'all.
Yes, sir, man. Well, I would love to get your take for some of the audience on the power of brand and how it's been able to effectively elevate and distinguish your concepts from a concept that might
be unbranded. Yeah, I missed the end of it, but I think I caught enough to respond. I think, you know, I look at brand as the real only way to get competitive advantage when you're playing down a couple cards, right? People like us, first generation entrepreneurs, when you're coming up, we just don't have access to the same things that a lot of people do. And therefore, your own ingenuity is your competitive advantage, right? And I think brand, you know, you touched on it. It's when you got to make a big investment in it up front, right? But being tactical and being smart about brand up front allows you to create that moat around your business, right? Nobody can do it like you do it if you do it well. And I really learned from, you know, hip hop music, and, you know, EYL is kind of spot on with my education in terms of like Jay-Z, Rockefeller, right? That diamond went up, you know what time it was. Mm. Master P, No Limit, you know, make them say, like it was these references to their brand at all times that created that moat around what they did. And to me, I looked at it the same way. Like if I was gonna, you know, build a company or launch something from zero, when I have a lot of, you know, much better capitalized players around me, what's my advantage? It's storytelling, it's branding, and it's creating that, you know, that bridge. And I think, you know, I tend to look at brand like it gives your company personality, and it also, most importantly, allows people to buy in with an emotion. And that's the toughest thing. You know, you're talking about sales versus brand. When you have a brand that people can emotionally relate to, that is the most definitive thing about where, you know, about your company going forward, because people can't take that from you, right? Your sales might get cratered because of COVID, or you might have, you know, a supply chain issue, whatever it is. But if your brand represents all of your values and has that personality, people will always stick by you. And I think I'm a very long-term player, similar to y'all. And that's how I would break it down.
Yo, so talk about like your Chai concept, right? There's a lot of tea shops out there, but I have never seen any of them with a line around two blocks with like straight up, you know, all the Indian boys out there lining up. They can't wait to support. You had eater.com over there. You guys unlocked ridiculous distribution. You guys have fanatics. You guys created like the what do you guys call it, like that, the pour over challenge. Like you guys have done so much shit, and it's like a 200 square foot space, but it is like really it's crazy what you've been able to do with that space, man. So talk about like how you approach that, and what gave you the what's the secret sauce, man? Like how can someone who has pretty little in terms of space and in terms of resources be able to maximize the way you have?
Right. I mean, you know, just for context, we opened 6 months before COVID shut New York City down, and we ended up 2020, we ended up in the black with both our restaurant and our e-commerce operations. And I attribute a lot of that to brand. And that's why I say it is because, you know, I mean, to answer your question about how we unlocked it, I think we approached it as, and I talk a lot about this, you know, storytelling. What is a story that you're telling as a company, right? That becomes part of your brand story, which thereby leads to brand equity, right? And you guys touched on this a lot. What's brand equity? Simply put, is credibility, right? It is the intangible reputation that you have with your customers that nobody could take from you. So when we spent about 18 months before launching the cafe, doing pop-ups, doing events, food festivals, you know, hustling around the city, that was to create brand equity, right? Because we knew, look, whether we had a 1,000 square foot space or 200 square foot space, they couldn't take that brand equity from us. And, you know, John, you and I have talked about this a lot, is like, how do you scale the one-to-one interaction, right? That's what we did to build up that brand equity. What I mean by that is responding to every DM, going above and beyond, you know, at events or online to give people, you know, an extra cup on the house, or, you know, FaceTime with their mom because they were excited to walk into a chai shop, whatever it was. We made ourselves really available to that, built up that brand equity, and then monetized that, right? And I think that's where a lot of creators struggle with, right? Some of these YouTubers have, you know, decent brand equity. You got a lot of social media personalities with decent brand equity, but if you don't have a product to sell back to them, you're just popular, right? And don't pay the bills, as we know. So we turned that brand equity into that experience, leaned into our community, stepped up for them, right? What I mean by that is we were hosting, you know, artist meet and greets at the cafe. We were letting, you know, people meet with their book club and things like that. We were pouring back into the community because that's what our brand represented. And now, you know, we did, you know, well into the six figures of e-commerce in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic, which really opened up what this business can look like, right? So now we have a true omni-channel model with the retail, with e-commerce. I'm actually going to be in Austin in a couple of weeks, John. We just locked in with Neighborhood Goods out there.
Hit me up.
So, you know, we're taking it now to retail as well. And, you know, it's that line from American Gangster, right? General Mills, right? When Frank Lucas is making that comparison, Blue Magic, right? That's a brand name. They don't know me more than they know the CEO of General Mills, but they know what that stands for. And that, you know, that's a hustler's anthem right there. So I think a lot of that is what I've picked up and what I put down.
Can you talk about, like, I feel like branding, storytelling is extremely important, and the power of creating myths. And shout out to my brother Wallow. He had one of the most profound things I've ever heard. If anybody doesn't know his story, he spent 20 years in jail. He came out, hit the star. He has one of the top podcasts in the world. But long story short, he said something that was extremely profound to me. He was like, you don't have to never beef with the information. You don't have to like somebody to learn from them. And I say that to say, Donald Trump, regardless of how you feel about him, it's not a political show, but one of the greatest things he's ever did was brand himself. And he made things that was normal seem out of this world extraordinary. Normal in his world, as far as a lot of people in Manhattan have buildings. That's not really normal, but I'm just saying, as far as be a millionaire, billionaire in Manhattan, you know, a lot of people have buildings. And he didn't even own a lot of these buildings, but he made sure he put his name on every single building. So now when you drive down the West Side Highway and you see 10 buildings that say Trump on it, whether he owns it or not is irrelevant, because the story and the myth lives much larger than his, you know, royalty fee for actually leasing his name out, right? Yeah. So to bring it down on a micro level, you know, I talk about this a lot, but, you know, people see our trucks. We have a truck, an 18-wheeler. We're not the only person in the world that has trucks. A lot of people have 18-wheel trucks. But the story and the myth was told, and it is going to live way longer, and it became a million times bigger than the truck because we put our emojis on it. We put EYL University on it. We put Earn Your Leisure on it. We made a complete monstrosity of it. And whatever we get from the truck, the value in brand equity and the value of doing that is going to live way further than just traveling goods from Atlanta to Houston.
And what it also does is it stamps us in that world, right? People watched us have an interview about it. Mm-hmm. They watched us learn about it, and they watched us actually execute on the information that we obtained. So now it's a funny question. Everybody asks how we're doing. And like, yo, y'all got a truck. What? Because nobody had ever seen that done. Even though, like, I mean, we're from New York, so we see 18-wheelers all the time. Never did we ever think that that's actually money that's passing us. That's actually a business that's passing us. And so now to see us do it, being from where we're from, it's like, oh my gosh.
And you guys
are bold enough to get a truck. And like John said, you're crazy enough to put your face on it.
Even, because I want to get Ani's perspective, but even I want to even break it even lower than that. Because some people might, you know, a truck is still cost a good chunk of change. Merch, everybody does merch. Every small business does merch. So we're not the first people to have merch, assets over liabilities, track suits, things of that nature. But we took a lot of L's in our merch journey. We're still learning merch. And we revamped our merch. We founded a distributor in Pakistan. It's a whole process. So we could have just put online that we're selling merch. But going through that process, we gained information. So we filmed a podcast about how to start a merch company. And we did every single thing that we do from A to Z free. We could have charged a lot of money for that. Mm-hmm. We did that free. We put it out. And then we said, okay, here's the discount to buy the merch. We created a story and we added value. And then we're going to sell the product.
Yeah.
And we're not going to apologize about selling the product. But we made a story about
it. But a lot of the things that you guys are saying is illustrated on that last graph. Things that build brand, you will take an L for up front.
Mm-hmm.
The truck is not making you money, if it's making you money at all. It might even be costing you money. Costs me a lot of fucking money. All of the things that I've done that have enriched my brand, Co-Fan Harlem, for example, is an incubator that first put me on the map, cost me a ton of cash. Ani, you have kicked off a number of projects, and I know you front-loaded the investment up front, right? And we are delusional practitioners in that we heavily over-index on brand. What's that, you know? There's probably a balance between going too brand heavy, you know, and compromising sales. But I feel like I see you execute on your projects. And when I see you storytell, to Rashad's point, I know what it is that you're doing. So for you, I mean, is the hope that the brand, like, are you just going all in and you feel like you're going to cash in on some big opportunities down the stretch? And for you, it's just about kind of going the distance, or is it just the only way you know how? Like, help me make sense of this ridiculous thing that is like going all in on brand up front.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And to Rashad's point too, and this is, I think, one of the most tactical tips that I want to share with people watching tonight is, like, you know, Rashad mentioned the word myth, right? And sometimes when you're starting out early on, that story that you're telling, you may not entirely be living, or, you know, you're trying to make it look a certain type of way, or, you know, you don't really know if you're going to make it to the other side of that, right? Jonathan, you and I have been in many scenarios where, you know, we're in the middle of something, whether it's a residential, you know, development project or something crazy, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. But that documentation and that storytelling and you reflecting on your experience throughout that whole process is, to me, all an extension of brand. And I want to mention something that happened in my life that changed. It didn't change anything, actually. It just validated what I already knew. And that was, I was in the middle of a couple of my first real estate projects, right? And so what I would do is I would work, you know, 5 days a week on the agency job. And then every weekend I'd work real estate. So I'd wake up at 9 a.m., go to Newark, New Jersey, painting, you know, spackling, doing all these small things, trying to get my units turned around. And I used to document all of it. It wasn't glamorous. It was literally just me eating shit the entire time, but talking about what was going on, talking about the value, the neighborhood, the ARV, you know, the construction budgets. And in 8 months, I had raised $250,000 just from people on Instagram who I didn't know, watching my stories and being like, yo, I trust you. I like what you're doing. I want to get into real estate. What's your minimum? And me being like, it's $50,000 to invest with me on a joint venture, and walking out of that with $250,000 from Instagram stories, just because my brand was constantly being extended through, you know, stories or through my posts or whatever storytelling I was in the middle of. And that to me was so real, because that validated this thing that I knew, that I think nowadays we focus on micro interactions with people that we look up to or respect or want to learn from. And those micro interactions actually have much bigger impact than we realize. It may be a 15-second clip, but it sits with people if your brand story is whole. And man, I took that $250,000 and I created, you know, millions of dollars in portfolio value without having to put up my own bread. Right. Incredible. So for anybody that's like wary about where they are with brand, or if they're like, you know, they got 200 followers, it doesn't matter. Right. What matters is you telling that story and or that myth at certain times and being consistent with it until the right people pick up on it and be like, this is dope. Let me share this. And that's how you grow. And that's how you honestly remain who you are. Nothing changes about you or your story. You just consistently tell it.
Ani, I got a question in that, because it's like, again, it's that hip hop coming into our lives, right? Like when Drake said, "I'm the greatest," I said that before I knew I was. It's that same thing. But I wonder, in this sense, like we see people start businesses and they try to start brands and then they don't even trust themselves because something deviated in the story. So for me, I'm thinking about your situation and how COVID was an alter, right? You 6 months after you start this business, and we actually recorded the podcast, this unimaginable event happens in your business, but you still trust the brand. So can you talk about that, how you didn't deviate from what you, that story that you created, and try to create a new one?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think that, first of all, sometimes your brand story might change a little bit, and having the flexibility and knowing what can change and what can't change, that's like an intuition you got to have as, you know, a founder, as a creator, and you'll build that up over time, right? That's like a muscle that you build over time. For us, you know, my guy right now is taking a video of all this. That day that the cafe shut down, we pulled up with cameras and we documented in real time, you know, it raining on the window, me standing outside being like, yo, this is insane. And in real time sharing how I felt, you know, because that was still central to who we were as founders in that brand, right? Mm-hmm. We still believed in the business, believed in the community, believed in our product. We just got hit with the act of God, right? But that didn't mean that I wasn't allowed to be vulnerable. And I think that's the other key here, right? Is like people look at, you know, even with John now, like John's the face of Loop, but John's brand is different from the Loop brand, mm-hmm. right? And so like there may be certain vulnerabilities that he has to share as a founder that won't be reflected on the company, but you know, they'll be reflected in his journey. And that's the perspective I took. I was like, look, I'm the founder, I'm the owner, and I'm taking these L's and I'm gonna take them and I'm gonna share them, but the company is still gonna be all things go, sticking to the story, but we're gonna show the reality of it in different ways.
This is, I wanted to say something before we go on a different topic. We interviewed Grant Cardone and he actually,
shout out Uncle G.
episode out now, classic. So
128, right?
We was telling him about the trucks, and he said, he was like, you know, would be really good marketing. I'm like, what? He was like, burn it. He's like, burn the truck. And so he was saying how one of his,
that's so grand, man. It's ridiculous.
His truck burnt. He had a truck and it burnt, and they called him like, yo, the truck is on fire. And he was like, tape it. That's good content. But so. And shout out to Maddie J. This is one of the most profound things I've ever heard in life. Maddie J on Ash Cash's podcast, Inside the Vault, EYO Network.
Slight plug.
Maddie J said he was on Toro. He took a major L. His cars was getting like messed up. He had to go to mechanic. He was losing money. While he was losing money, while he was making all of these mistakes, he was documenting his journey. Because he said, one day people will pay you for your failure. That means is that everything that you went through is now going to be a learning experience. Now somebody you can else. Teach. Yep. So now you went through a global pandemic and lost money and did this and did that. Now you are in a unique position as somebody that actually made it out of that as the voice of authority. Mm-hmm. Now people will pay you for mentorship. Yeah. For courses, for classes, for books, whatever. Yeah. So it's like, even in a loss, there's a blessing, because by documenting that and by not running from it, by embracing it, it puts you in a position as being an authority that people have to come to you, because the next time there's a global pandemic, the only way that they can learn is from somebody that's already been through it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like they've watched you go through something. Right. They've watched you in the mud, and it's like, I was with him. I remember when he was crying. I'm so happy for him. I want to support him in any way I can. John, I got a question for you. As Ani was talking, I was thinking to myself, right? You have a trusted brand as yourself, as John Henry. What is that like now going to Loop? Or do you feel like you have to reinvent yourself, and or your audience that was with you that knows you as John Henry? Are you thinking they're automatically going to come with you now to Loop? And what's that process like?
Man, it's a learning experience for sure. My brain is gritty as fuck, right? Like Ani, when he came on, he said, John, I see you got the two-tone back. I got the two-tone back, all right? here's the thing.
Day-date.
Here's the thing. No, sir. Just the day-just, day-just.
Day-just.
I had to pawn this bad boy. This bad boy right here, I had to pawn it when I was in my lowest point of these renovations, went south, I'm out of pocket, you know, and I had to come up with the mortgage, and I was tizzapped, I was tapped. And I was looking around like, yo, what could I just like, what could I sell for 3 G's? And and I did one of these. I was like, oh, fuck. And, you know, and I knew what I had to do. And I pulled up to the Diamond District. Shout out my boy, Gabriel. And yeah, he slipped me 3 G's for it. And I bought it back. And then that happened one more time before the end of the deal. And so now it's a badge of honor. But for example, that's my brand. I'm just a gritty motherfucker. I don't mind it. But the Loop brand is an insurance company. It's a financial services entity. And so this for me has been an exercise of phase one is me leveraging my personal brand, much like you do to prop up these new entities. But at a certain point, you got to step back and let this new entity grow. Because if you lean on your own brand too heavily for too long, then you will never be able to outgrow the current size of your brain. And I know that Loop will be a multi-billion dollar company. We will take it public, and it can never get there if it's the JH show. It has to end up being something that's larger than any one person. And in order for that to happen, I have to take a step back. And so it's still something that we're learning to do, and we're proactively thinking through, because at the same time, you want to use all the things that you have at your disposal. Because if you are Bobby Bernstein and you got a rich uncle who put up bread to get your business going, and by the way, let's say he's got a portfolio of buildings that he can put you on and whatever, you're going to take advantage of that. And so we as a culture have very little things that we can take advantage of. So the few tools that we have, we definitely should deploy. That's my take. So, whew, man, Ani, I want to give you the last word here. We're coming up.
Can we do like a bonus round?
Let's do a bonus round.
All right. Well, I just got one more question. Then, and can we get like two questions from the
Ernest, from the audience? I got questions. All right, so, raise your hand.
Ani, I just got one question before we go to question and answer. Scarcity. How do you feel about the scarcity model as far as branding? Because like Cronuts, that's a shop in New York that they sell Cronuts, which is like a combination of donuts and croissants. They only open for like an hour a day at like 8 o'clock in the morning. This is before COVID. I don't know what happened, but you gotta, and I actually did this before. You gotta like wait in line at like 6 o'clock in the morning. They open up, but just like, it's a scarcity model. There's a variety of different people that even sneakers, Jordans, they release the sneakers. They only have a certain amount. Nike can make as many sneakers as they want,
yep.
But they know that if they have a limited amount, it drives the demand. It's a whole scarcity play. So how do you feel about scarcity model in building brand and marketing?
Yeah, I mean, so personally, I think that as a society, or just there's so much going on right now that if you can afford to lean on scarcity as a point of attraction, use it sparingly. But I think that nowadays, like if you're in the middle of a gold rush and you're like being romantic or being cute about how much you're putting out, I think that could actually be a disservice for a lot of brands. So I'm aware of the power of scarcity. We went through it ourselves last, you know, during COVID. We had a brunch at the restaurant that was like only had 10 seats a day, and we would sell out in like 15 minutes every day, you know, and it was a great way to like build awareness around what was happening and keeping us top of mind. So it does work 100%. But I think what a lot of people do is they lean on scarcity when they don't really have something that actually validates their brand, if that makes sense, right? And you know, if you're starting something new and it's like, oh, only 50 pairs, like, you know what I mean? Like, okay. But I think scarcity is a tool that you can deploy with finesse when you're at that point, but don't lean on that to start something, because it's kind of see-through.
Yeah, there's other ways to deploy scarcity too, though, right? It's not just quantity, it's also time sensitivity. Right? So you can make it for a limited time. And for example, when I'm out there raising money, one thing I realize is if you don't give them if there's no time that the round is going to end, people will kick the tires forever until there's an action forcing event. So I would agree with you, Ani, but also some of these classic retailers that, you know, ironically have gone out of business, they do things really well, certain things really well. And that was the offers, right? So like it ended up, it can be something that cheapens your brand, but these cats are good at straight off, like JCPenney's with the ill offers. Now, not every brand is going to be a coupon brand. However, I pay attention to, you know, offers that drive a lot of value. And Ani, you're in the e-com business and EYL, you know, you guys run these flash sales too. So I think scarcity, I agree with you, Ani. I like your take that scarcity is a tool and you should learn to use it. And I think that scarcity in the fashion business specifically works very differently probably than any other industry from what I've seen.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's get one question from
the. Let's see. We got a hand over here.
If they're actually there. Let's see.
Hodges, what's going on? Unmute yourself. You've been unmuted. What's going on?
They had a hand up the whole time. So.
Yeah. Good morning, fam.
What's going on?
Good brothers. You just answered my question, Ani did, because I have a couple real estate properties, and it was hard for me to find people to do good work. They was always, like, in my opinion, half-assed, you know, they told me they knew how to do something. And after the job was done, it was, you know, it was whack. So I ended up having to get the knowledge myself and do the job on my own. So he answered it for me. That's why I had my hand up. And I appreciate you calling on me. And brothers, have a nice day.
Nah, no problem.
Appreciate you.
Blessings. Blessings. He blessings kept it
a buck. Thanks, Hodges.
Also, to the folks watching right now, because I'm seeing some questions around that PDF. So if you go to loopinsure.co/EYL, loopinsure.co/EYL, that PDF is now available. So you could just click on it and you just type in your email and then you'll get a PDF sent to your inbox. So you can get all of that brand essence framework and all that other jazz sent to you, and just use it in your hustle, man. And let me know what you think of it. Yo, while we get another audience question, can we just do a quick lightning round? Hip hop, we all refer to it. We all pull from it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through and name who we think has been the most effective brander in all of hip hop and some key lessons that we've taken away personally. Who wants to start?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many great branders from Death Row Records to No Limit Records to Cash Money Records to Bad Boy.
Yeah.
But I think the greatest brander has to be Jay, because, you know, his brand has survived 3 decades, and that's extremely impressive. And the biggest takeaway that I get from Jay is that he always reinvents himself. And he always, Drake does this well too. He always surrounds himself with the newest people. He has no problem severing ties, whether that's a good thing or not, that's to be debated. But Jay always, you know, he's always in the mix with something that's new and progressive. He's not afraid to change with the times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's built his brand off of a mystique. It's a nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
You never see him. He's not on Instagram. He's never on Twitter. He's not on TikTok. And that's a way to, you know, that's risky, because it's like, you know, and that's extremely, extremely risky and extremely, extremely rare. But he's built such a nostalgic brand that at any given moment when you see him, it's like seeing a ghost. Like, you know what I mean?
If it wasn't for these pictures, they wouldn't see me at all.
Yeah. So I think he did that intentionally. And that has helped him remain relevant for 30 years.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Jay is our guy. Jay is our favorite guy. We're going to keep saying Jay's name. And I know, John, you're sharing this until we sit next to him. But I'll say Yeezy.
Yeezy.
I think what Ye's done is incredible, right? Like the Yeezy name, the brand itself speaks for itself. It's transcended music. It's transcended fashion. It is the symbol of new and cutting edge. And he's done that over time. And he said he was going to do it, right? Like, he lives that line too. I'm the greatest. I said that before I knew I was. Mm. He's been saying it since 2003. He would say it to anybody that would listen. So to watch it come to fruition. And even like with the Forbes thing, I know, John, you had some things to say. And I was right on with you as far as the Forbes thing. It doesn't matter if he's worth $6 billion or $2 billion. Right. He's a billionaire. And he said he would be. And he's here doing it now. So his branding is amazing with everything he does. And everybody might not agree with the way he goes about it, but you can't deny if he steps into a room or if he puts his name on a product, it's out of here, right? Mm. People are wondering, hey, look at Gap. Wow, why is Gap stock rising? Well, yeah, this guy said he's doing a brand partnership with them. And they know when he puts stuff in the stores, it's leaving the stores. Mm-hmm. I've been, if anyone has been to a Kanye concert, I've been to a bunch of them. There are people who literally don't come to see the music. They will stand in line for the merch for the entire show.
Wow.
For the entire show. I, no joke. I went to the St. Pablo tour. And it was the one he was like floating over the whole crowd. And I tried to buy a shirt. And I couldn't get, I was like, I'm going to miss a show if I wait in this line. And people were waiting in line. My wife was like, I'll go. I'll miss a song or two. I'm like, nah, it's fine. At the end of the show, I had to wait an hour to get a t-shirt. I'm like, these people have not left. Everything he puts on sale at a concert sells out.
But also, before you go, John, he's also like Jay in a sense where you don't see him. He's also built a nostalgia. Mm-hmm. He pops up. He's more active than Jay on Twitter, but he pops up for Twitter rants every now and then. And then he's like the groundhog. Then he goes under. He'll be on Instagram, then delete all his Instagram.
Then he's driving in water.
Yeah, it's that Elon Musk, that crazy, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's another one where he's not really accessible like that.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's something we said. Like, one of their best attributes is that you can't have access to
mysterious,
them.
Man.
Yeah. Jay Electronica said, familiarity doesn't breed.
That's the line.
Content. Like, meaning like sometimes you oversaturate yourself. It doesn't even breathe. People get, they start to hate you just because they see you so much. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's like being with a spouse or somebody.
What do you say? One day they want to knight you, the next good night you.
Yeah.
Mm. Ani, what you think, man? Who's the best brand in the hip hop game?
I mean, I think the answer is Jay because of the ecosystem of product and brands and businesses that he's created, right? I mean, what he did with Tidal, Champagne, Rockaware, you know, Jay's pedigree and his track record are insane. I'm going to throw in a dark horse just to acknowledge what Nipsey did while he was here, you know, rest in peace. But I think Nip was instrumental in branding a consciousness and a way of thought that we hadn't really seen in a long time, right? He made people believe in ownership and got people interested in real estate and, you know, was doing a bunch of technology, smartphone, AR, you know, NFT related things way before, you know, any of these things were in mainstream consciousness. And I think that, you know, Nip's all money in, no money out, you know, that there was a lot there, you know, fuck the middleman, like, there was a lot there. He just was more
marathon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, thank you. Mm-hmm. Reminded me, right? Like that. It wasn't mainstream, so less people will acknowledge it. But for people like us who were grinding during the time that Nip was grinding, it was like, you know, he had a different effect on consciousness. And I think that's been, you know, obviously it's big for me. People know how I feel about Nip, but
yep.
I gotta acknowledge that because I think that he was one of the new school players, you know, that was really about to run it up after that first crop of Jay, Ye, 50, Snoop, Dre, you know, like that graduating class had already moved on. I think Nip was a revolutionary in that sense.
Yo, can I also just say that what Jay-Z did with Tidal should be fucking illegal. Like, that's my man's and he made his bag. But like, did no one, like, guys, remember when we came out with Tidal? He made his fucking entire catalog exclusive to Tidal, brought a bunch of artists, got him exclusive to Tidal, inflated the value, sold a third of it to Sprint, cashed in, I think it was 200 mil, right? And then once that shit was flopping, he pretty much brought his catalog, catalog right back on Spotify.
And Apple.
And so, because he was vulnerable during that time that he was only on Tidal. And then he made himself accessible again and sold that bitch. And he sold it to Jack Dorsey and then finished cashing out on it. That is ridiculous. That's like market manipulation, except for it's his own personal catalog and IP, you know, so he could do it. But
he took the risk, right? I mean, what him and, you know, Beyonce did with having their music exclusive on a platform that wasn't available to everybody, that, when they knew they were losing millions of dollars on the other side, that, you know, that it was it was a risky move and it paid off for him. So
bought it for 50, sold a third for 200, finished selling it. Man, it's crazy. I think the best brander in the game is Puff. I think that bro, I seen recently the Ready to Die documentary. I mean, the guy has an eye for talent, and when he backed big, you know, he put this whole like movement and brand around. And for as long as I can remember, Puff has been that flashy type. And he took that whole persona, going back to that, you know, to the earliest part of this episode. His word really like is just lifestyle in a way that Hove is not. Hove is mysterious. Hove is kind of crusty, actually. Puff, you won't find, you know, with the exception of when his girl passed away, and of course he was in that dark period of just mourning. That was the only glimpse of time really that I could think of that Puff wasn't smiling, laughing, and he was able to productize that entire just persona. He's got the spirits brand, and I had the chance to kick it with his CFO, and his CFO told me projects that we invest in don't net a whole lot. The projects that we build from scratch and vertically integrate and that we own, the IRR, the internal rate of return, the profit is through the roof. Because Puff is not, that speaks to his superpower. He's not one to invest in another vehicle and then let it do its thing. He's one to just live it. He lives his products, man. And for that, I think Puff is the best brander in the game.
That's a good point, John. Because when you were talking about brand, I was thinking about Ciroc. It's more than a drink. It's a lifestyle.
A finer vodka. A much finer vodka.
Right. This guy had like every commercial was a James Bond movie. Right. Then it became the Ocean's 11 movie. And it was like, wait, this I have to taste this. This is the only thing I can drink. I need to feel like that. I want to look like that. I need to have that lifestyle. Does this drink bring it? And now you got Khaled and he's on a jet ski. And every time like I look at his glass and I'm like, that new summer breeze is like that new drink looks incredible. I have to try it. It's like it becomes a part of your lifestyle. It's great marketing.
I just want to say one more thing before we can maybe just get to one more question before we wrap. Yeah, but yeah. Bringing it back, like X said, get well soon, X. Let's bring it back to the streets. And
home of the brave.
I want to always make this as relatable for people as possible. Another EYL alumni that we had, Nacho Benga. He's a young man out of Baltimore. Killer. Crazy story. Grew up in the streets, literally in East Baltimore, and became six-figure entrepreneur off of nachos. So yeah, he does these nachos where he puts like, you know,
that's what's up.
Yeah, so. A long story short, so this is the most practical thing in the world, right? Like anybody can make nachos with shrimp, and he was making it in his microwave at first before he learned how to cook. So this is like, because people be like, you know, this is high level. This is the most practical thing in the world. Branding, right? He told the story through a bunch of other stuff. So he created a dance called the Nacho Benga Dance.
Nacho Benga.
And he went viral in Baltimore and colleges like Morgan State and, you know, Townsend and all of these schools and all of the high schools and in the neighborhood. So now he's going, this is before TikTok. He's going viral for his dance. He made a dance attached to the food. So it's one thing to make the nachos, but now he's branding it with the dance. And, you know, he's doing like going to parties and hosting clubs and all of that. So it's so many different stories that come to mind as far as branding is concerned, but that's one of my favorite because there's nothing more practical than that. Like he literally started from the bottom,
legit
making nachos out the bando. Literally, if you haven't watched that episode, it's very inspirational.
You know what's dope too? I'm not gonna finish it. I'll say something.
And he, without even knowing what he was doing, he's branding himself by creating a story and making himself a legend and a myth.
Yeah.
But it comes down to nachos. That's the most practical thing in the world. Like he's not selling anything that's out of this world. He's literally selling nachos. That you get from nachos, like the bag, the nacho bag.
Cheese and anything you want. This is the craziest part about that story, right? So he's getting booked to come to clubs and be the host, right? He's getting paid that because his song is crazy. The dance is even crazy. You got the club doing it. You know what he's doing when people are leaving the club?
Selling the nachos.
He's got his food truck outside selling you the food. Because the first thing you got to do is eat when you come out of a party. Mm-hmm. You've been sweating. You've been drinking. You're hungry. Here goes the nachos. $5. Get your sauce.
Wow.
Incredible.
So, ridiculous.
That's fine. I think that's a valuable lesson too on brand, right? Is a lot of times like it doesn't the way that your product gets popping or the way you get popping isn't necessarily your core competency, right? The dance might be bigger and getting more impressions than a picture of the nachos, but that's what good thinkers and founders do, is they find ways to create, you know, parallel ideas and concepts that lift up their entire brand.
Let's take one question before we wrap.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I hope I did Nacho Plow by saying sauce that like that.
Shout out to Nacho. That's my boy.
Martelli, we're coming to you. Unmute yourself. You've been unmuted. What's going on? Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah, I'm here, bro. Come on.
You know,
I'm
not, you know what's coming like next, right?
don't do fridge breaks.
Nah, what's going on, bro?
Bless. How y'all fellas doing, man?
We great, man.
Glad to hear that. Listen, it's funny. You guys have touched on a couple of things that I realized marketing-wise that I never noticed before. Like, even, for example, me signing up with EYL, the day that I was just listening to one of your on Market Mondays, and you guys created that urgency with the sale is about to run out. And I was like, damn, should I? Next thing I know, bam, I throw my card on the thing. Next thing I know, I'm blessed to become an earner. So I'm saying, but you guys drove it into me by creating that urgency, which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy, marketing, how that works. Quick thing I wanted to touch on is when you're going back to what you were mentioning as far as with creating a brand. So I'm doing the Amazon thing, trying to, you know, create my brand, and that is so hard to get done.
Selling on Amazon.
Exactly. It's so hard to do right now because you have so much competition, and you have to get a bunch of people. You have to get up front. You have to get rated. You have to get ranked and all that. So it's so hard. Is there anything that you might think that I could be able to use to help me, you know, get better with my business?
Wow, that's a great question for Ani, but it's also a brilliant question in general. How do you brand yourself when what you're selling is commoditized and also, i.e. widely available, and also you're on a platform that is commoditized? Ani, what's your take on that? That's a powerful question, actually, because a lot of people could probably relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea of when you engage with Amazon, you have to know that you are engaging on somebody else's platform and somebody else's brand equity, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon's making it easy for you to sell and easy for other people to transact. And so you're going to lose a little bit of competitive advantage there. My recommendation would be create content in your own world and still direct people to Amazon. But that brand equity and the things that you're doing on social, editorial, you know, live stream, all those things can still be as fruitful as you need them to be. So just because the transaction is happening on Amazon, it doesn't mean that the entire narrative or the story or the brand is happening on Amazon.
You know, another thing, this is my take on it. This is what I would do. So the good thing with Amazon is private label. So like lint rollers, shout out to Josh Chris, lint rollers or toenail clippers. A lot of these things, this is what a lot of people sell on Amazon because nobody ever asks where's a lint roller coming from. So like they sell lint rollers in a factory in China, you get it and you can put your label on it. So it could be like EYL lint rollers, right? What I would do is whatever product you're selling, let's say we're selling lint rollers, right? I would go to every social media blog, whatever. Now going back to creating a story, black owned lint rolling company, the first ever black owned lint rolling company out of Philadelphia, whatever. I would create a story about it and make the myth and make the story way bigger than what it actually is. You're not lying. You're a black owned lint rolling company. But now that sounds way better than me just putting a lint roller on Amazon.
Lint rolls for sale.
I'm gonna make a whole movie out of it. I'm gonna make a whole motion picture out of it. Yeah. Black owned lint rolling company. I started from the bottom. Da 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 da. Had to get distribution from China. It's all about how you say things.
It's true. Damn, it's crazy. That's crazy. Seems to me like I'm gonna have to cut you a check.
That's $1 million worth of game, but you know, we'll talk about that later on.
Shout out to the earnest.
Yeah.
So separately.
Yes. Gentlemen, this was fun. This was fun, guys. John, I'll let you wrap this up.
Episode one, man, in the books. Thank you guys for rocking and rolling with us, man. Ani, always a pleasure to have you on. You guys got to check out Ani, man. He's at Ani Hustles on Instagram, on every other platform. Just one of the realest practitioners in the game. You get a lot of knowledge just following all of his content. So talk about storytelling, talk about brand. I take notes from him. I personally reach out to him with questions that I have around how to crack the code on marketing, on brands, and things of that nature. So definitely tap in with Ani, man. That's the dude. Support his chai concept. You won't be disappointed. It's a lot more than chai. So lock in with Ani. But yeah, to all the folks listening, man, thank you guys. This has been a limited, this is episode one of a limited series. We're just getting going. We're just testing out and experimenting with the show format. I know that some of you guys, I can already see hundreds and hundreds, literally, of downloads of the framework. So I hope that you guys take value from it. I think in future episodes, we will keep the presentations to a minimum and just keep it more rooted in conversation, experimentation, and, you know, examples from pop culture and different moments of that nature. Next up on episode two, we're going to be diving into content strategy, which everyone here on this particular pod could literally do a master session on. And our special guest for that episode is going to be none other than the team captain for Gary Vee. So this is Andy Kranak, who runs Gary Vee's entire 35 person content team and just crushes their content strategy. So we're going to get into the three H's of content: hub, hero, hygiene, how you can make it higher, how much this should cost, how you should structure your whole shit. It's going to be a banger. So thank you guys. EYL, appreciate you all as always. And for those of you guys listening, remember, loopinsure.co, the link is linked up there. Tap in and join the waitlist / make sure you download the framework. Talk about scarcity. It's going away at the end of the day. So you got to go download that shit today. And then we'll take it from there. Fellas, thank you guys so much. Appreciate y'all.
Oh, love is love.
Thank you. Safe, y'all. Love y'all. Peace.
The link is also in the description of this video and it's pinned here. So yeah, thank you guys. This was fun. See you next week. Later.
Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.